Monica Packer is a recovering perfectionist, podcaster, and progress coach. She is also the founder and facilitator of a community called About Progress. About Progress is a community made up of people who want to work on their self-development and self-acceptance. Through her community, Monica guides women to grow into living with purpose and connecting to their greater potential. On this episode of Be the Good Podcast, Monica shares with us her own personal journey away from perfectionism and into the practice of embracing the mess of progress. She shares how she was inspired to create this community and how she is working to support and inspire the women she works with. Let's take a listen. All right. I have with us here today, Monica Packer with the About Progress community. How are you, Monica?
I'm so great. It's so wonderful to be here today.
Thank you for being here. I'm really happy to have you here and to talk more about this amazing community that you've created. So you say that a few years ago, you would have described yourself as unreliable at best when it came to habit formation. You blamed yourself, thought you simply weren't motivated or disciplined enough. But in time, you realized the truth about yourself and habit formation, and then it had nothing to do with you and everything to do with your methods. Can you tell us more about how you came to this realization and how it shifted not only your perspective, but also your life experience?
This is part of a bigger blown out story, I think, because habit formation for me was definitely not something I thought I'd ever get into because of that identity I had of someone who was bad at them. And that identity was based off of years of underperforming in my life in almost every area. And that underperformance came after years of overperformance. And I mean, many years of being an overachieving perfectionist. And I lost so much along the way. And the biggest part was a sense of who I was, because no matter, you know, how my outcomes looked, whether I had them when I was, you know, overachieving and when I did not, when I was underachieving, my identity was based on those outcomes. You know, whether I had them or not, whether I was successful or I was a failure. And that was a giant pendulum swing that I rode for almost my entire life until I turned 30. And around that time, I realized that I was actually a perfectionist. And I thought, you know, I had aspired to be a perfectionist the first 20 years of my life, thought that was a really good thing to want to be. And I crashed and burned majorly, had, you know, honestly life-threatening mental illness. My life was in shambles, had to work through years of recovery. Part of my mental illnesses were eating disorders, plural. And in the pursuit of that recovery, I went to that other side of the pendulum swing of being too terrified to try, because I thought you only had to pay a certain price in order to be good at things. And that price was something that nearly cost me my life in my mind. That was the framework I had, that all or nothing framework. And around 30 is when I realized, oh no, I actually am still a perfectionist. I didn't realize that. Thanks to a great therapist, I learned that about myself. And I realized that still being measured by my outcomes was keeping me on the sidelines in all areas of my life. And the biggest one for me was that loss of identity. I really didn't know who I was anymore. I had no semblance of what made up Monica, my interests, my hobbies, just my values, anything about myself. So the habit portion of this all came from me first working on trying to rediscover myself and really getting some more clarity about, well, who am I as a person? And what does matter to me? And how can I step off the sidelines of my life? And the biggest part of that was leaning into the mediocre for the first time in my life, that giving myself permission to not be good at things and to try and to fail and to make room for failure, removing my identity from outcomes. And that's where my life became this experiment about progress over perfectionism. What would it mean to lean into this whole progress idea that it's okay to be messy, to mess up, and to be mediocre at things? I love how I accidentally did some synonyms there. The old English teacher in me is really proud of that. and you know, that took a few, not just a few. I mean, I'm now 7 years into that experiment. But then what came along for the ride was habit formation, because After a certain point, I hit a plateau where I wasn't even progressing very much because I didn't have time for it. Like, just logistically, I didn't have the energy because I was not sleeping well. And then that went along that whole route of me again, realizing I had blamed myself for how bad I had been at habits for so long, when really it wasn't me. It was the all or nothing models that I had been taught about habit formation. And, you know, really removing my identity from those methods was really helpful first, because I could see, oh no, it's not that I'm bad. It's that these methods are bad for me, and they're bad for almost everybody, especially women. And then, you know, it became another kind of experiment of learning about habit formation. Now, I just gave you the longest answer in the world.
I love that.
So I know you're like, oh wow, this was a lot, but that's the full picture there.
No, that was a perfect answer, because I really want to thank you for being so open and sharing with us that personal struggle and just the dynamics of, you know, being the overachiever and then the underachiever and then trying to find yourself in the process. You know, I just really, truly appreciate and admire your honesty there. And you're eager to help other women now shift from blaming themselves to better supporting themselves. So yeah. About Progress is the community mm-hmm. you created that is made up of people who want to work on their self-development and their self-acceptance. So can you mm-hmm. tell us how that community first came to be and what your intention for that community is?
So going back to that fork in the road for me, I'm now 36 and a half. So this was 7 years ago, almost exactly at this phase of the year, I was thinking about the sideline me. And the reason I was thinking about the sideline me was because I was approaching my 30th birthday. I almost said my 60th birthday. That was interesting how that just came out. But, you know, I was 6 months ahead of that 30th birthday and just thinking, one, I don't know who I am, which I already brought up, but two, also, there's all these things that I said I wanted to do that I've never done. Or I'm always in this place of seeing other people do things, and I have that feeling and that thought, like, that seems so interesting, or I'd love to try that, and I never do. So am I going to hit every decade marker and be in that same place with all of these things? And in that pursuit of trying to figure out, like, who I am, I started something called, now in my community, a do something list. For me, it was a way outside of goals and resolutions to do the work to uncover and discover who I was, to explore what it meant and feel like to be myself. And on that list, I had a list of 30 things I wanted to do before I turned 30. Now that's since changed. Like, it doesn't have to be that long. It can be a list of 5 things. But as part of that list, I had things on there that I had in the back of my mind of things I wanted to try and do, but I didn't because of that fear of not being successful with them. And, you know, they were things that would never be on the headlines or Pinterest worthy. They were things like make 30 new recipes, and I counted a new form of baked oatmeal that I never tried before. They were like, go to 5 new ice cream places. But there were some other things like go to a museum. You know, because I had done an internship at the Smithsonian and I wanted to get back into the art scene. There were things like run a race. And one of the things on there was to start a blog, because writing was one of the things I had been drawn to for so long. I had all these ideas of things I'd wanted to write about, and I never did. But as I did that, not a success. Nobody read that blog. It was not like an overnight, wow, like, you've got to read this. But in the trying of it, I weirdly got this sense of confidence in myself and in the trying of all those things on my list. And it taught me that doing something was not only better than nothing, it was actually better than all too, because all comes at a cost. And in the writing of that blog, I started to find other women who were trying to figure that out too, trying to figure out, who am I and how do I get off the sidelines of my own life? And because I was already in this zone of trying for trying's sake and it not being about the outcome, one day I had an idea to start a podcast. And really soon after, I started it because I was allowed to be bad at it. I was allowed to be mediocre. And at first, I was just listening to other people's stories about them learning who they were and overcoming obstacles in their lives. And I learned so much from them. I learned a lot of themes that really helped me keep going and create more and more of a community of people who wanted to be focused on the same things. And the same thing basically was that the transformation lies in the process, not the outcome. That's what we were all learning at that point together. That we becoming who we are, like the huge transformations we're always wanting, those after photos, and I'm not talking about body, but you know, the after photos kind of idea, that happens in the mess. It's not an outcome that makes us better people. It's the process of getting there. And that grew into this community of women who are really working on identity, you know, finding out who they are. They're also working on fulfillment, meaning making time for their identity, for having interests and hobbies and self-care and ways to are taking care of themselves, and also habits, which gradually came along for the ride in surprising ways so that the other two could be supported. And it's changed my life and it's changed a lot of other women's lives. But the biggest thing I would say from it is I'm still that lesson that we all were attracted to is still the heart of everything we do. That's the transformation lies in the process, not the outcome. It really is about progress. It's not about perfection because we never really get anywhere anyway. Like we never fully arrive. We don't get to this like summit and this peak where we're like, that's it. I never have to try ever again.
And I love this. I love the conversation of the trying, just all the ways that we hold ourselves back from trying. And oftentimes, like you said, it's because we're afraid of it not being good enough. The outcome not being good enough stunts us from even trying in the first place. And I can really relate to this myself, just in the things that I've done. And especially, like you said, with the podcast, you know, I also have a blog and not many people read it. And you know what? I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm all right with that because it's actually that part of the process of me writing and sharing my ideas or my thoughts is an act of service. I'm hoping to inspire someone else. But at the end of the day, it's also just a part of my own process of feeling like I'm being creatively stimulated. And that creative stimulation has fueled my ability to do the podcast. You know, it's fueled my ability to run my nonprofit and create films. Yeah. And so many points along the way, I've stopped and said to myself, you know, that voice of fear comes in and it's like, you're doing too many things or, you know, and you're not, maybe not any one of them is doing something spectacular. And, you know, you start to, you know, get down on yourself, like the perfectionist in you could say, you should probably just focus on one thing or, you know, but at the end of the day, I am now, I see myself as a whole person because I've allowed myself to try all of these things. Even though and despite of the fear that I have of them not being perfect or not being perceived as good enough or, you know, all of these ways that we get in our own way. I just love that you are not only speaking to that, but you're holding community and space for so many women who are struggling with this exact same, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. So you say that life is too short to be hell-bent on perfection or lost in procrastination. I love that. And I totally agree. But our souls crave progress. So the About Progress community guides women to grow into living with purpose and connecting to their greater potential. Can you tell us more about how you encourage the women in your community to find fulfillment in the mess of progress? And you did just speak to it a little bit, but tell us a little bit more of what the mess of progress actually is.
So I've actually, as part of this now 6.5 years of actually podcasting, but 7 years of this experiment, I have really gotten into a ton of research about what it actually looks like to grow. And some of the biggest things that hold us back are these wrong ideas that have been taught to us or modeled to us about what it looks like to grow. We have this idea that progress should be linear and that it should, if it's on a graph, you know, you start at the bottom corner and you go just straight up to this, like, well, it might be diagonally, but you're still like moving up. But all the research shows that real progress happens differently than we think it does. And it's not a straight shoot. It's actually a really squiggly line. And a lot of those lines those curves go down. So a lot of things get worse before they get better, or they're really all over the place. And it doesn't mean you're not changing. It means you are. A big part of what I do with women is to help them know that they're doing it right. That if they're not changing overnight, they're still doing it right. If they mess up one day, or they don't do it the way they exactly want to, if they have a failure, they're doing it right. And when I say that, it's not me patronizing them and patting them on the head. This again is research backed. And part of the research shows that the most successful people on earth are those who are comfortable and learn how to tolerate the discomfort of failure. That it's part of the process. It's not something they're always working to avoid, although it never feels good. It's never fun to have the failure. It's very much a part of the process of growth. And another factor there is that the biggest dramatic shifts happen with small steps. Now, I'm teaching you about progress in general because that's honestly where a lot of women start in our community, is rewiring what it looks like to grow. And we have to be willing to let go of something that's really scary for us. And that's, we have to let go of the ideas and the models and the forms that we've been taught of what it looks like to change. And a big part of that is that it is the room for failure, the mess, and that it's small wins that we're looking for, not the overnight success. So I feel like that answers your question there.
Totally. Totally. And I think it's just so important to talk about the aspect of failure being a major contributing factor to overall success, mm-hmm. as we define it, you know, that it's just so, so important to have open conversations about the importance of failure and the importance of putting yourself out there to grow and change despite your fear of failing. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, you answered that wonderfully. Thank you. So can you tell us more about the coaching and courses that you offer?
So I'm in a weird phase right now where I'm kind of in between because I'm about to have a baby.
Yes.
So for years, I've done a small group coaching program, but that's going to be on the back seat. And I do one-on-one coaching, and that's also going to be the back seat. But what I do have as the foundation for the women who want to work with me in the future when I do open those up is something called the Sticky Habit Method. This is a method of habit formation for a real woman. And that's every woman I know. It's women who have real lives, real responsibilities. And again, research shows that women's lives have to look different than men's lives because of our responsibilities, whether or not we have children inside the home. And those responsibilities require us to be way more reactive in nature, which means we don't have the consistent, rigid schedules that habit formation normally relies on. And so that means we have to do habits differently. And it really speaks to a lot of the things we talked about today. We interweave a lot of, like, it's, you know, how to make room for failure in the habit formation process, how to shift the ways that we think habits should be formed, including that whole darn idea about consistency. We've been taught that wrong. And also how to build habits instead of just starting with the ideals, how we build towards the ideals too, and ways that actually create real consistency. And I'm like rolling my eyes because I define it differently over time. And the reason why this isn't me trying to sell this, what it is me trying to do though, is help women who are like sitting here listening and thinking like, some of these things are really, you know, challenging the ways that I've been taught it takes to grow. Like, I actually want an overnight success. And, you know, I do too. Like, I would love to be an overnight success.
Who doesn't?
Right. Oh, but that's not the way that we create sustainable change. Okay. Maybe I can sit with that. But what about habits? Because I know in order for me to form a habit, I have to do like the habit I want for 28 days consistently. That's wrong. Anyway, this is for the women who are blaming themselves for failing, basically. I want them, even if they don't even look at my course, they don't even look into it. Totally fine. What I want them to know is that they have been blaming themselves for habit fails that are not theirs to blame. The methods that they've been taught have set them up to fail because our lives look different. And if I can just tell them that so they can have that moment of release and also that moment of hope, that maybe they can do things differently and still get to where they want to be. In fact, that's the way to get to where they want to be. I hope that can help them do that. So that's where women start, though, in terms of like what I offer is that course, the Sticky Habit Method. And there's way more to come this year after my maternity leave is over.
That is so exciting. And definitely, I will be sure to link in the notes here how to find everything that you just mentioned. And I would encourage everybody Thanks. To dive into your website, dive into your Instagram, and, you know, just be open-minded to learning about reframing your own relationship with habits. And so you act as a cheerleader, coach, and educator, but you also say that you are a fellow learner. How important would you say it is that we remain continual learners in our ongoing personal growth journeys?
Well, I think it's essential. And I think anybody who is in any field to any degree of success would say that you never stop learning. I just aired an episode this week with a really well-renowned psychotherapist. Her name is Dr. Jennifer Finlayson-Fife. She's been on my show, I think, like 10 times. And she's always a very popular guest because she always over-delivers, like in ways that you have to write notes while you're listening. And normally, I don't do so much talking on my show, by the way. People are like, you know, I'd be like,
well, that's what's fun about being a guest on somebody else's podcast. You know, you get to actually elaborate.
But I also always feel like, Monica, shut up. But anyway, I was talking to her in this last interview, and we were talking about the first episode we ever did together was the only episode in my 6-year history of podcasting that went viral. The only one. It was actually my 14th episode too. And now I have like almost 460. So that shows you like a lot about progress right there, right?
Yes.
Like I'm living it out every day with my work.
Wow.
But this one went viral. I say this because we were saying at the end of the episode, she's like, you know, we really need to re-record that. And I was like, tell me more why you think that. And she's like, because I was so nervous and anxious. And I see all the times I was hesitating or like really doubting the way I was saying things. And I know so much more now. And I listen to that same episode and feel the same way about myself. And so like, it's sometimes just nice to know like experts in their fields are learning all the time and are changing and developing and growing. And in fact, if they aren't, then they are dying on the vine. That's the only way we've said this earlier. There is no outcome. There is no arrival point where you just have made it and there's no more trying anymore. And if you want to continue to grow in your life, you have to be willing to, one, be open to being wrong and failure and learning. That's the only way.
Yeah.
I love that. That's my favorite part about my work.
Because
I could live and die by the outcomes, the numbers every day. I could live and die by how many people sign up for my courses or my coaching. And there's times where I totally fall for that trap and I get really sad. Or there's times I fall for it and I get really prideful. So you're always on like that roller coaster. But just being open to that learning part, that's where the joy is at.
I totally agree. I think that if we can reframe our perception of personal growth to just like you're saying, like not look at the end goal or not even look to an end goal as if there is one, that if we could instead turn our eyes onto the progress you're making every single day. And like you said, in the mess of it all, that's where actually true joy lives in the process. Because like you just said, you were able to see that your 14th episode was the one that went viral, and now you're 400 and some episodes in. You know, that is just a perfect example of the fact that it's not like you're working towards a viral episode 500 episodes later, you know, that you're just enjoying the process. And I also love that example that you gave of the woman you had on, because I think we all do that to ourselves too. It's, you know, especially now that we can listen back to things or watch a video back or, you know, take too much time looking at a photo that you took of yourself, and you immediately start pointing out all the flaws and all the ways that it could have been better, you know. But I think as a consumer myself, and that you might agree, I'm not looking for that. I actually don't want perfect from what I am, you know, ingesting in my life, whether it be reading or what I'm watching or what I'm looking at. You know, we really do need more authenticity. And so I really commend you for what you're doing and what you're inspiring in other women too.
Thank you.
On this podcast, we often discuss the topics of compassion and community. Obviously, you're tapped into the importance of community, and you've done a great job creating a thriving community. But how important or necessary would you say compassion is when it comes to our own growth and also in dealing with others, you know, as they're on their own, you know, different unique growth journeys as well?
This is another huge shift that women need to own if they want to grow differently and if they want to grow in ways that are sustainable outside of the all or nothing cycle, the all or nothing model, right? Is in the past, especially when I was the overachieving perfectionist, I thought that my success came down to me and my own personal grit and determination and discipline. And while there are elements of that that are absolutely true, persistence is one that's always going to be true. Persistence really does matter. And consistency does matter too, but in a different way than we've been taught. I thought that if I were to be gentle with myself, that I'd be letting myself down. You know, that I would be giving myself passes, that I would just be open to not trying very hard. And the opposite is true. Making space for self-compassion, for gentleness, making space for mistakes and having to be more flexible with things is actually what has helped me over the last 7 years grow exponentially. And when I say exponentially, I'm speaking even back to those like overachieving stereotypical perfectionist times. I've grown way more making space for myself to be human than when I did. When before I would not, when I was like hellbent on not being human, like I must be like hyper good at everything and hyper diligent. Or like I'm not, I'm just going to stay in the sidelines. That's been true for all the women I've worked with too. And this again is also research backed by Brené Brown, who we all know. So I don't have to like, just say, read her books and you will see it right there in the writing, in the numbers. The people who get to sustainable change in ways that are excellent in nature over time, it's based on this ability to make space for compassion rather than shame. Shame never drives sustainable change. It doesn't. And that takes a lot of work to rewire in ourselves and a lot of work to try. And it also takes a lot of courage because it means we are willing to try in a new way. And we're also willing to mess up in ways that might be scary for us, in ways that we've been terrified to allow.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned Brené because I'm a huge fan too.
Yeah.
But what I loved about Brené's work when I found it was that it's the research. She has done actual research. So it's almost like, I think when you have a concept that has research backed behind it, it gives you this extra level of permission to lean into it, you know? Yeah. So to lean into the idea of compassion versus shame. And also how, I mean, I love how she packages the fact that we've just been hardwired for shame too. And we've normalized shame for so long because generations before us, that's just, it was a part of the process and nobody really ever took the time to stop and look at it, which is also why her work is so important because she did. And I just think it's, you know, listening to someone like Brené or even hearing you talk and you have this, you know, the knowledge and the experience of your own experience, but also the research to back it up that says this really is something worth paying attention to and potentially deciding to shift for yourself, giving yourself that space. I found that myself in my own personal growth journey that it is so incredibly valuable to my overall peace is that I give myself grace in the process of the messy stuff and in the process of whatever is hard that I like a habit that I'm trying to change. If you're not compassionate with yourself, you know, you're almost going to just be running in place, don't you think?
Oh yeah. Running in place, running in circles, or just waiting.
Not making any forward progress or growth, which is ultimately the goal. And I was reading on your blog that your goal is to do something every day that scares you, What would you say is the importance of having a daily goal like that? What have you learned from adopting that type of mindset?
So this goes back to the big all or nothing model that I started experimenting against 7 years ago. I'd mentioned that I learned in the do something list that when you do something, it's not only better than nothing, it's better than all, because all comes at a cost, and a cost that I don't think any of us should pay anymore. So the do something that scares me came along for the ride there. That's what the original list was kind of about. Like, what would happen if I did things that scared for me? And when I say that, I don't mean like I'm going bungee cord jumping every day. There are things that scare me I will never do. And that is one of them. Like, that's not the goal. It's actually a lot quieter in nature. It's a lot more internal. It usually involves moments of vulnerability. If being able to tell like one of my kids, hey, I really messed that up. I'm sorry. I snapped at you, and that wasn't okay. When like the other part of me like doesn't want to have that conversation because they won't validate me. You know, they won't be like, yeah, it's okay, mom. Some kids will, but another child I have will not. You know, so that's scary to not be validated and even trying things to repair things. But for me, it's just this general idea of I have this still. This part of me that is really afraid of failure. I have a part of me that doesn't like it. And I think all of us will. There's parts of me I'm scared to share. There's things I'm scared to try. And having that mindset of like, it's okay to just do something that scares you and to be bad at it. And that has been a mindset that's shifted a lot for me, not just in terms of like, my I do actually still have goals about what I'm doing. You know, we talked about goals a little bit, but you know, it's having the courage to try and fail and work towards things I really want, to own those things. And it also goes back to those quieter moments of just trying to step in more into who I am, into my values. And that can be scary.
Yeah. And I think it's also about just acknowledging and leaning into the fact that you have the ability to continue to do something, even if you're afraid of doing it, you know, right or wrong or whatever, that we can just stop ourselves dead in our tracks sometimes for fear of being vulnerable. And yeah, vulnerability sometimes is just the key to open up, you know, a whole new lane of energy for yourself. By just leaning into the vulnerability. Again, that's also a Brené Brown topic.
Yeah.
But I love how you framed that, because I think that doing something scary, really the scariest things that we can do is be our most vulnerable selves. But then also the most rewarding things we can do is be our most vulnerable self.
Oh man, I wish I had a transcript of a podcast I just recorded with Emily Nagoski. And that's basically, I mean, word for word, almost what she says is, you know, the true freedom lies in having the courage to be ourselves. Mm. And I couldn't agree more with that. And that's me, you know, paraphrasing what she said. And I'll add one more thing that, you know, do something that scares me. A lot of us are scared of believing that the small things we do matters. I had a client say this years ago. She said, it takes the greatest of courage to do the smallest of things.
Wow.
She was sharing with me something she was learning in the process of our work together. Never forgotten that. And I have the worst memory in the world, because that's true. And that's a big part of what we can live out every day. Do something that scares you means believing that even if you can't do the full habit that you want, doing half of it is still something. It's still a small thing that matters. Yeah. And it's also the bigger picture. A lot of us think that success has to be headline worthy, when success is mostly the small things that will never be reported or, you know, slapped on Pinterest or Instagram worthy. It's the small things that we can really find fulfillment in.
Yeah. And I think success also is, when you're defining like your own true personal success, it's also just having the courage to put one foot in front of the other every day. Yeah. You know, and being able to just take small steps towards any goals or anything that you're hoping to see come down the pike, it takes the courage to say, I don't know when I'll get there. I don't know if I'll get there, you know, but I'm going to focus on putting one foot in front of the other. That takes a lot of courage every day. It's believing in yourself, you know, it's continuing to believe in yourself, which is a very challenging thing to do. But again, like you said, equally as rewarding. And so it's like this balance of doing the hard stuff to reap the rewards and benefits. I also have another podcast with a friend of mine, Krista. We do wisdom work, it's called, and it's all about personal growth. And that's basically what we say, is that you have to put the work in order to really unearth the beautiful wisdom that lies within yourself, but also just to like live with joy and peace and more calm. You have to find this balance, right? Of being willing to lean into the habits that are hard that you need to shift, or, you know, all the ways that maybe you hold yourself back. And I think that the work that you're doing is such a powerful force in the space of female conversation, because we talk about this a lot on our other podcasts, is that women in general, we feel like we need a permission slip to move forward with these kind of goals or these changes or this growth. You know, it's almost like you need someone to say, like, it's okay for you to change. It's okay for you to be a different person. It's okay for you to want more for yourself. And I think you holding this space within your community, what you're doing is saying, it's okay. It's all right. Because look, I've done it. I'm continuing to do it. And we're going to do this together. So I love the power of the community that you're building.
Thank you. I mean, it's a two-way street. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the power of community, is that everybody's in it together, supporting one another. And that actually leads me to my next question, because also on your blog, I read that you say, I have plans and hopes to return to work once my kids are older. I'm really confused about what field, though. I might return to teaching. I might write. I might pursue interior design. I might go back to graduate school. I might just bake all day. Who knows? And this really resonated with me when I read it, because, well, you mentioned, did you say you're 36 and a half now?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. I am too. So I have a feeling that this may have resonated, because we're probably at the exact stage of life together. But I know so many women right now who are just deeply entrenched in motherhood, you know, for years now, myself included, and who can put a lot of pressure on themselves to have a game plan by the time their kids are a certain age, or possibly they feel pressure to return to a career that they had prior to being home with their children. But I think you can relate to this as well. It's like so much changes about you personally in motherhood that I know for me, it was like, I knew my whole course going forward, no matter what my career was going to be, it was going to be different, because I truly have shifted into a completely different person. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, what would you say is the value in keeping an open mind and allowing ourselves that grace and space to let things unfold as they should and be guided by your own heart to what the next best step is?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you found that, because I don't even know where that is on my site. I think I wrote it like 7 years ago, but it's nice for me to be reminded that that's where I was. And it's also nice for me to remind myself that it's okay, that I'm still kind of, you know, figuring it out, even though now I feel like I have more clarity.
Yeah.
But if I were to speak to the women who are in that space of feeling like they need to have it worked out before they try, like they need to understand what it is, I'll say that is what I have been living out the last 7 years. And it's in the trying that the clarity has come. It's in, you know, pursuing something that has helped me decide if it's for me or not. And in fact, a big part of that 7 year ago journey was I did lean into a lot of those to try to kind of get some feedback to get that clarity. So I did a lot of interior design stuff for friends. I had clients and stuff like that. People paid me to make cakes but I was just like kind of in this space of joyfully throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what would stick.
Yes.
You know, and I had that with the do something list, but I also had that attitude about these bigger picture things too, of like, let's just see. And that was really a big shift for me because I thought like you had to know what the end was mm-hmm. from the beginning in order to start. I actually coached someone on this past fall. And for those who, you know, I said, I'm not doing coaching right now. I share episodes with me coaching. So you can get like vicariously coached online. And this is one of those. It was shared online. And she's trying to figure out, how do I move forward if I don't know what the next step is? And what we really got some insight on was that it's not that she didn't know what the next step was. It's that she wanted to know the Z step before she did A.
Yeah.
And we talked about, tell me about a time in your life, you know, when you thought you knew what the outcome was. And she's like, well, it was when my husband was going to grad school and we moved back there. We knew what he was going to be doing. I'm like, okay. And did it work out the way you guys thought it would? She's like, no. I'm like, tell me more about that. And she's like, well, actually, he decided he hated academia. Even though we went back to get his PhD so he could be a professor. I was like, wow. And how has that worked out? And she told me more about like, you know, what the story was. And it all worked out technically. Yeah. But even though that was one time in their lives where they did think they knew what the Z outcome would be before they did the A step, it turned completely different. And we use that as a way to act as proof for herself that it's okay to not have the Z labeled yet, because it will likely shift anyway. The goal is less about what you want, even though that is part of it. And I feel like I could talk a lot about goals here, because that is something I have leaned into more over time. I do have clear visions of what I want, but I also have the permission for it to change. Yes. I have the openness to where it's going to take me. But so going back though, this is the heart of the message, is it's less about what you do. It's how you feel about what you do. It's less about what you're achieving, and it's more about who you're becoming. And that's true with every decision too. Decision-making is something I've ended up teaching a ton about. And that's something we talk about there, is we can't predict. And it's more about making series of choices rather than one choice that will define everything that comes. That doesn't happen in real life. It's a series of choices. And even less about the choices, it's who you are as you show up to how those choices unfold. So a lot of different mini lessons there, but they all kind of wrap in.
Powerful message. That was a powerful message. And yeah. I really appreciate that answer, because it just, you really did highlight all the ways that we have to keep perspective on that yeah. process, right? And not think that there is this clear path and things will happen from A to Z exactly in a specific way. You know,
I think that happens because we often think our purpose is with a title of some sorts, like, or like it has to be like really definable. And for me, that shifts. I mean, when we let ourselves say like the purpose is who I really am, and who I am can be brought to any role I might take on or position or goal that I pursue. And that's really freeing.
Yes. And it's the feeling, like you said, and the who do I want to be, you know, kind of latching more onto those as goals. You know, what, mm-hmm. how do I want to feel in whatever it is that I pursue once my children are, you know, a little older and I have that time? How do I want to feel? Who do I want to be? And the most important thing I think you've said throughout this whole conversation is the trying, the just mm-hmm. being willing to try. And try maybe even a bunch of different things before you figure out. And I also love the throw the spaghetti at the wall analogy. Like I feel like I adopted that the whole time I've been home with my kids. It was like, you know what? Yeah. Now is the time. There's kind of this beautiful opportunity when you're in that phase of life. And if you have that type of situation where your primary role is caregiver, but you know, maybe you spend that time, any extra time you have, throwing some spaghetti at the wall and figuring yeah. out, just dabbling in things that, you know, hobbies or passions or interests that could potentially turn into something down the line if that ends up being something that feels good.
Yes.
And it's leading you towards the person you think you'd like to become.
So women who are in that position, I would say, start with the mindset, the do something mindset. It's both, it's both a way of thinking, but it's also a way of acting. You know, I can do something. I could try that. I can do this little thing and see where that takes me, and not even a big thing. And then the other part is create the do something list. If you're like, you don't even know what the interests are, that's what that is for. And that's something a lot of my community members are making right now at this point of the beginning of a year. And even if this is airing later in the year, it doesn't matter. So create a do something list. And I actually have a guide for that. That's free. If they want, they can go to aboutprogress.com/DSL. And there's a whole like workshop that's free. There's a guide, there's examples of other women's DSLs that's the thing I hear the most about, this change your lives. And none of them are like, go back to Harvard and become the head of like the most life-changing nonprofit of all time. Like those aren't the things on the DSL. It's these smaller things. It's the exploration that changes women's lives and helps know what's next over time.
That is amazing and powerful. And I want to just piggyback off of the fact that you led us to your site for the DSL. Can you tell us any more areas, spaces that we can connect with you, follow along with what you're doing, or access, you know, any of these free items that you have available?
Yeah, go to the podcast. That's where you're going to get the most information for the most free. Like I just pour
and
my
remind
whole heart
me of what the podcast is called.
It's called About Progress, so they can just search for it right where they're listening right now and give it a listen. And then if they like it, I would invite them to subscribe. And then if you are curious about the habit formation stuff, and maybe some of those things we talked about kind of like triggered some curiosity in you, I have a free class that they can take about why women must do habits differently. And this is research backed. It's not just like experiential. And it's also just not this weird tagline. And it's not patronizing, like, because we can't. No, it's because we're set up to fail. And I'll tell you why that is in this class. And they can get that at aboutprogress.com/habit class.
Great. Thank you so much. And we can find you on Instagram also. Uh-huh. What is your handle on Instagram?
About Progress. Which is nice.
Perfect. I was going to say,
this all is about progress.
Super easy. Just look for About Progress and Monica Packer. I can't thank you enough for taking the time today. This was packed full of nuggets of wisdom and inspiration and actionable, insight that I really think will be powerful and useful for the listeners. So I'm wishing you the best of luck on your brand new baby that's coming very soon.
Thank you. We'll need it.
Well, you're a pro. How many children do you have now?
This will be my fifth, but it will be almost 5 years between my last child. So that's why I feel like, do I know anything? I don't know.
You know everything you need to know, I'm sure.
I hope so.
But wishing you all the best. And I will be sure to drop everything in the show notes so everyone knows how to connect with you. And Monica Packer, thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Be the Good Podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Also, be sure to follow us on Instagram at BeTheGood_media. And visit us at www.bethegoodmedia.com. And remember, we can all find our own way to be the good.